Okay, good morning, everyone. Wonderful to be here. First, I'll introduce my stellar panel, and I'm delighted that all the chairs on this stage are full. Very, very happy to have everyone take their seats. From the far end is Swati Bhargav. She's one of the big faces of entrepreneurship in India, and I am delighted to see her after a long time. Welcome, Swati. Right next, Saloni. Saloni Bhadwaj is the co-founder of Lotus Petal Foundation. Welcome. I've got Anita Vasudev, transformational coach. Good to see you again. Got Ashwini Sirsikar. She is a group service line leader at Ipsos and Cynthio. Very much welcome to the discussion here. And Elsa, my good friend and change maker, Elsa Mary De Silva of Red Dot Foundation. And we've got Dr. Ambika Sharma, who's the CEO of ABWCI, which is the Association of Business of Women in Commerce and Commerce. Thank you very much. We'll go straight into the whole idea of claiming agency, especially as cultural change makers in and outside the home. Swati, I'll begin with you. On this particular stage, I'm going to just make that one small hygiene rule. Short answer so I can get everyone in with lots of questions. So maybe a line of introduction of what you do and your take on the subject.
Hi, everybody. Great to be here. So I'm Swati, and I'm the co-founder of Cash Karo and Earn Karo. It's a consumer tech startup. We've been around for 10 years, doing about $1 billion in GMV every year, raised $30 million in funding. So coming next part of my introduction, I can actually cover with the question itself. So I grew up in a small town called Ambala, and I was the first person, so to speak, and the girl, first girl as well in Ambala to get a scholarship, study in Singapore. Then I got a scholarship to the London School of Economics, worked at Goldman Sachs for 5 years. So a lot of the things that I did at the age of 16 were not things that were happening around me. So one could say that how did you balance that culture with your career aspiration? And I think that I did it by including everyone. So when I first got my scholarship offer from Singapore, I actually invited all the aunties, uncles to come and give me advice on should I go or not go. And they said, hey, you must go. It's such a good idea. And that actually made all the difference because they felt like they were a part of that. So I did it with inclusion and with respect.
That's brilliant. Saloni, over to you.
Hi, I'm Saloni, Saloni Bhardwaj, and I'm the co-founder and CTO for Lotus Petal Foundation. We run schools for children from the underserved community living in the urban slums of Gurgaon. We work in the areas of education, nutrition, and livelihood exclusively for the underprivileged. So, you know, taking the baton from here, I was really the first one to have a passport in my house, you know. The first student studying in the University of Sheffield as a woman in the Department of Journalism. First intern in a radio station filled with people who looked entirely different from me back in the day 20 years ago while living in England. And that also was my first ride towards the West. I still get that feeling remembering those days in my stomach. I think the strength of an Indian middle class household, you know, the values of bringing everyone together, being able to make do with less resources, relying on education as a game changer, and knowing that your life can change if you organize yourself and go for it. I think these are absolutely non-negotiable values that we grow up with. So I think holding these things very close to our heart, remembering how harmony and bringing the community together was important while growing up, and pushing the limiting beliefs that sometimes, you know, stop us from going forward. I think that is something which, if balanced, can answer the first question.
I love the whole idea of hustle and hunger being central to the two stories we've heard so far. Anita?
Yeah, I'm a coach, and I'm going to bring to this one-on-one lens, because for me the personal is political. So the data is important, but I think the stories of each women are important. And when I looked at the word culture, I said, oh, best of luck. Because when you look at India and you look at culture, it's not a simple word. It's heritage isn't simple. We've got historical layers, we've got regions, we've got languages, we've got intersectionalities of caste, of class. Culture means different things to different people across this country. And trying to decipher what are the threads that are important or that work for us as women is the first thing we need to be doing. And I think all the people are doing that. And I'm hearing stories here. For instance, one of the threads I thought about was how community is important to Indian culture. We are not an individualistic culture. We are a collective culture. And here's the story of all the aunts and uncles coming and saying, yes, do it. And that's the support that we are trying to leverage. So when I thought of what do we leverage within our culture which will not disempower us, which will empower us and nourish us, here's the story. Here's the story of a role model that is actually trying to break historical or patriarchal layers and say, I'm going to be the first. And how do I do that? I hope you're going to manage to explore a lot more of this in this short conversation. Yes. But that's the first take.
For sure. All those layers are coming up in the next round. Ashwini.
Hi, I'm Ashwini.
Mic closer.
And I work with Ipsos, which is a market research agency, and I look after the qualitative research division, as well as the social intelligence and analytics, which is all about, you know, social media monitoring. And I've been in this business, in this line of business now for the last 25 years, and there's a huge change that I've seen in the way we, the marketers, as well as we as market research professionals are looking at women. You know, 25 years back when I started my career, women were only considered when we were researching categories, CPG categories, which is your chai patti, soaps and shampoos, because that's where people felt they had like a really big say. But today when we are talking to women, we are talking on diverse categories, whether it is automobiles, because we know the number of women who are driving cars today is much higher. And they're interestingly that the decision makers when it comes to some of these categories. Finance is another big sector, you know, where we are actually reaching out to women. Technology, I think the previous group did speak about technology to a certain extent. And, you know, the recent Chandrayaan experiment, which was there, we did see that women were at the forefront when it came to launching, you know, the satellite itself. So there's a huge change that we've seen over the last few years in the way women are actually being spoken to and being considered. I think the other point that I wanted to take up was, you know, this whole, you know, phenomenon around culture. So while there is a change and culture is very complex, there is one thing which has stood us in, you know, really well, which is the fact that we are a collectivist culture. We are not individualist, you know, things like family, being together, bind us together. And they've actually, you know, actually, that family is a big support for us. The reason why a lot of women are able to get back to work post childbirth is because of the kind of support that we have in India, which many other women in other Western countries don't have. We have, whether it's the mother-in-law who's supporting us, or it's our, you know, parents who are there, or even the kind of, you know, support system in terms of household help that we have is something which really differentiates us and gives us this, you know, push to actually perform better in our workplace itself.
That's great. Elsa.
Thank you for having me. I'm Elsa. I'm the founder of Red Dot Foundation, which is a nonprofit that works on gender-based violence. When I think of norms and culture, I've been a norm breaker all my life. And culture to me is not static. It's constantly evolving. And if you think of that, you have a role to play. So if I look back on the 20 years that I spent in two airlines and now 10 years with my nonprofit, I have always pushed my own boundaries, always followed my heart, but, you know, also keeping in mind my own goals and aspirations and being true to my authentic self. I'm not a technologist, yet I run a tech nonprofit. I didn't have any training in every job that I did, but I learned on the job. So what I'm trying to say is that you can do whatever you wish to do. All the limiting beliefs are in your mind. And if you choose to follow your heart, if you put in the hard work, you can set the stage for yourself. The other thing with leadership, and right from the start, we've been talking about, you know, how leaders should be responsible for something. I believe it should be responsible leadership. Responsible leadership demands that you show up and you're bold, you're courageous. You don't follow what is the norm. You set the norm. So if you decide you can change all the inequalities in today's world, you can do that. And you will then inspire others to follow in your footsteps.
Ambika.
It's very interesting to go last, actually.
You're not last now. You're starting the next round. It's about perspective.
Totally. No, but I totally enjoy this because I've always had to start first because my name starts with A. So this is a pleasant change. I'm not going to talk so much about myself. Of course, I lead a global chamber of commerce for women entrepreneurs, which makes it extremely interesting for me and a huge learning exercise because, you know, on one side of the spectrum are women who are entitled and there's legacy and all of that, and therefore it's very easy for them to get into the whole entrepreneurial journey. The other end of the spectrum are women who are afraid to even express or ideate and say that here's an idea and this could be a business proposition. So that's the space I'm in right now. In my own journey, you know, I've done all sorts of things, really. I've, in that sense, been very lucky. I've had that freedom at home. I've been brought up by a very strong mother and some extremely strong grandmothers. So I think that's never been a problem. But to answer your question about agency, I think one of the things, because we're sitting in India and the Equality Lounge is happening here and a lot of this about Indian women perspective, culturally we're very rooted. I mean, if you just go back you know, to the sort of the start of civilization, I don't want to draw upon anything religious, but just the Vedic times, women were very strongly, deep-rootedly embedded in the social milieu. And I think the whole concept of motherhood was about nurturing. And I think that is something that culturally, not just India, I think motherhood is universal in that sense. But we often take that away from when we reflect back on history. So I think in that sense, it's a lot about reclaiming that position, because we're really responsible in that sense for nurturing, for, you know, change management, you know, all these fancy words that we talk about, behavior change campaigns and so on and so forth. It all begins in the house. And then you extend that to your workspace. Create a safe workspace as you would, you know, for your children, in the family, in the house. So I think it's about that. It's about decision-making, leadership, taking charge.
Yeah. So great. We've got a glimpse into what our panelists do and a little bit on the subject. And I'll deep dive. But quickly, somebody messaged me. You haven't introduced yourself. So, okay, I'm the founder of She the People. And I've always been asked why, and I always answer, why not? So we'll get straight with, you know, with our panelists on this. I'm going to pick Anita, you. You kept talking about collective culture diversity, but collective cultures create conflict. And that's where we all struggle. That's our biggest challenge. Let's talk about that and put a gender lens to that for us.
Okay, because, and when you say conflict and cultures create conflict, culture isn't something that somebody teaches you. It's invisible. And it, before you can even start getting an opinion of what's working for us and what's not, it's permeated you. It's within you. It's inside your home. It's inside your organizations. It's inside you yourself, right? And women, there are a lot of things within our culture that empower women, and there are lots of things that disempower women. And the ones that disempower are what are being practiced. They have, unfortunately, patriarchal power plays layers of it, which keep women where they are supposed to be. So you have things, I have conversations every day with women who are doing well, don't want to know where their career is going because somebody is saying to them, abhi ghar baitho, now it's time to sit at home. Who's going to look after the elders? Haven't you worked enough? These are women who are experts in their field, they're doing well. And they, by the time they start getting an opinion of what is holding me back, they're already tired. Women are exhausted. They're too exhausted to fight back at whatever the culture is that's keeping them back. And what is it about that culture that's keeping them back? Yeah. The other thing that you spoke about just now was the diversity. Is that what you mentioned? And I think that's a great route to leverage, because we are a diverse culture. We are polytheistic, for instance. We are from all regions. We have languages. We have cognitive diversity. It's something that's being appreciated in the working world today. It's something Indian women do naturally. We hold multiple thoughts, we hold multiple ideas. Yeah. It's something we can take to the global stage even. But more than just take to the global stage, even take to women who can't.
You know, the flip side of this is that there's a lot to handle. And Swati, the way your story kind of, you know, triggered all these thoughts in us, I want to ask you, as somebody who started out with that gusto, the encouragement, where along the way have you asked yourself it's damn difficult to marry, you know, marry ambitions and this idea of the cultural roots? And, you know, I think the term culture here is extremely broad. It's also the culture of pulling people down. It's the culture of not letting you claim your agency. It's a whole lot of that.
You know, I have not felt that the culture has held me back at any point. I think it's about how we manage people around us so that they become support systems. So just to give you a couple of examples, I mean, while we were running Cash Karo 2-3 years ago, I started just creating content because it was COVID and, you know, we couldn't go out much. So I have about 500,000 followers on social media. And, you know, initially I used to think that, oh, will my mom say, why am I posting every day? It's too much, right? Or will my nani say, oh, your dress is looking too short? But they are the first ones who actually go and comment and like my posts. Because I think that women are also rooting for other women. Our mothers and our nannies and our grandmothers have gone through that time when they couldn't do everything they wanted. So today they are actually trying to encourage us if we are able to also put in our own hard work. The second example I'll bring here is 9 months ago, I had a kidney transplant. I did. So I had this kidney problem for 20 years, you know, and I was managing my work and, you know, ambition and everything along with it. And then my mom donated a kidney to me. And now, you know, I've just sort of completed 9 months. It's my 10th month now. So even during that time, I said that, you know, I want to be authentic on my social media. I don't want to lie to people and show a photo of me in the garden when I'm actually in the hospital. So I will share my journey and let it be an inspiration for others. Who knows, it might inspire someone. Yeah. And even at that point, culturally, India will say, don't post about anything.
Yeah.
That is Indian culture, okay? But nobody stopped me. They all said, you must, because you're facing this with a smile and that can be an encouragement for others. So you must.
Yeah.
So that's, I did. You know, and I was honest about it. And even during my entire, some of you were very kind to, you know, meet me before this. And you've seen some of those posts. So people were asking, how are you doing? And I've been sharing. And people have come back with such warm stories of saying, I've had this problem, but I saw your video. It was good. So I'm saying the culture is actually not always against us.
But the culture of authenticity,
yes,
is something women shy from.
Yeah.
Perhaps for good reason, because history is sort of try to build sort of this aura that keeps them strong and wearing the mask.
Yeah.
Saloni, your view on that?
Well, it's intuitive that you've asked me this because I am battling with this narrative. I think the whole premise of leadership, of this heroism around this enigma of leader, you know, is also somewhere where women are unable to get into because we are more authentic. We have the courage to be vulnerable. We have the courage to be able to say as it is. We have the courage to sometimes blur the home and office boundary and bring that empathy to a fellow comrade also going through the same thing. You know, we just need to own our space. We just need to own our space wholeheartedly. And just if it's not enough, then maybe just request for a little bit over there. And that is something culturally, unknowingly, we are trained to not ask for, you know, so that to avoid conflict, to shrink yourself, to not say what you thought or you think may give you that space. So I think it's about time that we review that narrative. We review that and we own the space, we own our voice, and we just say it as it is.
So, you know, one of these days I was following Shelley on social media and she put up this video of Madonna. And in one of her narratives, she talks about how I just stuck with it. And there is something that reminds you of what we keep calling resilience about, you know, how women deal with situations. But the way Madonna said, I just stuck with it. And she's seen generations of change around stereotype, patriarchy. And she faces that even now in her illness and, you know, and her age. So I want to flip this conversation from the within to the outside. And all three of you do a lot of work globally, and we're here in the context of G20. So Ashwini, when you look at the potential that women offer, the cultural diversity of India, the market we are, talk to that opportunity for us.
So in fact, you know, I wanted to pick up on a couple of points that were spoken about. So I think you also started the conversation talking about sisterhood, right?
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of that concept now emerging in India. And when you spoke about sisterhood, you spoke about family support from, you know, maybe the mother, grandmother, and so on.
Friends but and fellow friends entrepreneurs and fellow, also.
But we are also seeing a lot of unconditional support from people I don't know. So there are enough and more number of, you know, groups on social media which are burgeoning, which are actually providing support, guidance, mentorship to fellow women. And this could be at a very anonymous level. I may not know you at all, but you are there for me. And that unconditional support which is there seems to mean a lot to women than it would be, you know, only from the family per se. I think the other point which I wanted to talk about was the vulnerability, right? And it's a very, very important, you know, take which is there, because somewhere women across the world are caught in this battle to show that they have it all and they can manage all. So it's almost the picture of Durga with 10 hands. I'm managing my home, I'm managing my family, I'm managing my career, I'm managing in-laws and, you know, whatever, everything which is there. And I have to do it in the most perfect manner. But it's okay to accept that you're human. You know, you may not be perfect in everything. Your dreams and your aspirations may only cover certain, you know, parts of those 10 hands which are there. And you want to nurture only those. And that's why we're seeing this conflict which is there between the discourse around freedom and equality. Yeah, and this is a global, you know, discourse which is there, because equality always means that you're comparing yourself with somebody else. I am equal to a man, and hence my aspirations also have to be something which are standard codes of success, which could be becoming the CEO of a company, you know, becoming an engineer, and following those traditional codes of success which have been led, which have been set. But what women across the globe are actually talking about is that they want freedom. Now, freedom is a little bit different, because freedom is following your dreams, following the choices that you want on your own merit, right? I mean, it could just be freedom to not work. It could be freedom to, you know, step out of the house at 10 o'clock in the night to have golgappas on the road. It could be freedom to decide on who you want to marry or not marry at all. That's the kind of, you know, freedom that women are talking about, which is a little bit different from the equality discourse that we've been talking along, you know, so far. So that's, I think, one change.
And how fundamental it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Elsa.
So I work on the topic of sexual and gender-based violence, and we don't like to talk about it.
Yeah.
We pretend it doesn't happen, or it's happening to somebody else. And what we try to do at Safe City, which is our tech platform, is make what's invisible visible, because nobody reports it, right? And if you don't have the data, how are you going to find solutions? And this is a very important topic. It's as basic as the freedom that we were talking about. But if you even take the Maslow's hierarchy, the need for safety and security is one of your basic needs. And if you take the Indian context, that's one of the reasons, apart from the, you know, immense care work that women have to shoulder at home, it's one of the other reasons why women drop out of the workforce, why women compromise on their safety, why women have to spend more for their safety. So is that really a level playing field? When we talk about equality, we are assuming everyone's at the same starting block. But if you don't have safety, and I've come from Bombay today, I came early at about 8:30, the same venue, this beautiful space that we are in, I didn't feel safe. My Uber driver didn't really come to the venue. He told me to get off ahead. I insisted that we find the place. But if you think about who's not in the room, could they come here easily? What's the last mile connectivity from the nearest public transport? So when you talk about India, Shaili, I think there's so much of work that needs to be done to make spaces safe, transport safe. Again, we live in big cities. What about the smaller towns? Do you really have the freedom to choose your education or your career path? And often, under the guise of safety, families limit their daughters from going out and exploring what's available to them. All of us are privileged. Maybe we come from liberal families that allowed us, but there are so many more. For each one of us, there are at least 100 more who don't have those opportunities, and I see that in my work. So I would like to encourage all of you, use your platform to empower. Somebody said it earlier, be a coach, be a sponsor, be a mentor. I think that's very easy, but open up your networks. Find people opportunities, women especially, young girls especially. They need to see us showing up. They need to see us as role models. And then they will be able to emulate us and maybe aspire to do more than what we've achieved.
Absolutely. So Ambika, as usual, you end the discussion and then we start a new thread. But as you do shed light on your point of view on this, just sort of pick up the fact that, you know, we are for the first time seeing, at least this is my observation, having sort of covered G20, G7 over the last two decades, we're finally putting women at a very central piece of it. And no matter what people say, I've not seen this kind of a push with any other country in the world as India has done during G20. And there are still more events to go. I think the UN Women, Kanta, was here a short while ago. She's leading a large amount of it. There's a global recognition of the shift that needs to happen. Some thoughts there as we talk of the sisterhood in the round.
Okay, I was going to say something totally different, but let's pick up on G20. So the organization that I represent, we were officially the W20 Knowledge Partners. So we did a lot of work in the course of this last year, including being on the task. So one other first that has happened, and I think that's something we should be very proud of, as the G20 presidency, is that for the first time, there is an official communique that's gone out from W20. You know, that kind of puts women and women-led development center spot. And within that, there was a task force which was on women entrepreneurs, which we were very lucky to get sort of associated with. But the other thought that I was sort of playing with as everyone else was talking was that when we talk of culture and we talk about, you know, the global context, and again, the fact that this is happening here, there's a reason, I think, why we have the subtext for G20 that says, one earth, one planet, one family. This is a global community. I think we've come very far away from that isolated, polarized world. And in my own experience, I think what culture and conversations around culture do for people globally is that it gives you perspective. You know, you can connect in a way that kind of creates a common baseline. And one of the things that we do at the Chamber of Commerce is that we have a lot of trade dialogues. There's a lot of back and forth between countries and women entrepreneurs who speak to each other. There's a lot of this that embassies do as well. You know, there are trade attaches and they do the exact same thing. So what is it that we're trying to do differently is actually pull out these experiences which are very personalized. And I don't want to belabor the point, but I do want to share two things that we did as part of W20. One, we've launched a Shakti cart. It's actually a cart. We don't give that much attention to design, unfortunately, at least in this part of the world. This is a cart, and there's been a lot of research on carts, mind you. There might be people sitting here who'll say the Department of Science and Technology here and some other groups worldwide have looked at carts, but we've not looked at what it means for a woman or a woman vendor when she's using that cart. And how does that design need to be separate? So we have a prototype there, and we've launched something that's called Women in Vyapar. So this isn't a shop talk. I'm not trying to tell you about the chamber, but to bring in a point about cultural integrity and normalizing it for the globe. When we were debating this internally, you know, in the team, there were lots of very interesting words that came up. You know, we went to Spanish, you know, we tried something in a few other languages, we went to Sanskrit, and we were like, what is that one term that we can get to which would resonate with everybody? And surprise, surprise, we used the hashtag Women in Vyapar. And some people in the team said, but people are not going to know what Vyapar means. Vyapar, for those of you who don't know, in Hindi it means business. And we're about women entrepreneurship. So I said, what the heck? You know, there are words like jugaad that are in the English dictionary now. Yeah, yeah. So we now have that certification where any women entrepreneur who joins the Global Chamber of Commerce wears that badge proudly that she's a woman in Vepar.
That's very cool. Congratulations. But let's actually take that thread, and I know I have only 25 seconds on the clock, but I'll quickly run through a final comment here, which is center of a lot of these conversations, whether culture, diversity, is how economic power changes a lot for women. And I want to use that thread to discuss the power of sisterhood very quickly. So maybe 30 seconds, each one of you. Talk about how that itself is a game changer to much, you know, much about claiming that agency, economic sisterhood.
Well, to me, it's made all the difference. In all my journey, I've had very powerful women support me all the time, and that's made a lot of difference. But I want to take my time to just say that, you know, the one thing that can bring more people like us here on the stage is if we encourage women to be ambitious. You know, yeah. What I find really sad is when I see parents telling their daughters, what will you do by studying so much? You're just going to study so that you can get a good husband. We have to stop saying that, and we have to encourage ambition. Ambition is a good thing. And that is why when women want it, then, you know, the change will fully happen.
Great. Saloni.
I think where I am today was not only because I had role models within the family, but at every different stage that I outgrew. You know, so just being there and creating situations where you can be role models and have mentees who you can work with, check in with them, bring them in and ask what their commitment in the previous check-in, if that was done well or not. Creating a sense of accountability, creating a sense of work ethic, because it should be work ethic and the values of home that should be determining their place at work and not their gender really in future.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anita?
So I think economic freedom really goes a long way into creating, claiming your agency. And I think women networks and sisterhood is hugely helped, whether it's alumni or it's communities or it's companies and organizations. This will change the way women go back into the workplace or work and their lives. What will really change it, though, is a cultural shift. And for that, you need to engage with the other stakeholders as well.
Absolutely.
So it has to be sisterhood and more than sisterhood.
Ashwini.
Yeah. So yes, economic, you know, independence is the mainstay, because when you're earning, then you feel good about yourself and you feel a little bit more liberated. So that would be the first success when it, you know, first step when it comes to any kind of equality. And yes, there are several mentorship groups, there are several, you know, in the rural areas, we do see a lot of participation from NGOs and, you know, who are actually helping women to start their businesses, because women do have great ideas, and these ideas even, you know, come to them possibly later in life. They just need that extra push and a little bit of, you know, financial support to help them to realize their dreams.
Right. Elsa?
Economic independence gives you many options. So teach your children, especially your girls, to manage money right from an early age. And sisterhood is what got me here. We stand on the shoulders of giants. And I believe that it's a myth, or rather, there are more women who help you than pull you down.
Ambik.
So this is what I'm kind of living right now, because everything that I'm doing currently in my day job is about ensuring that women aren't just job seekers, but wealth creators. But what I also want to say is that there is a sense of vulnerability that's out there. You know, you spoke about it. I feel very deeply about it. And I think we beat ourselves all the time. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's perfectly all right. You know, and it's important to just be resilient, you know, like you said.
Indeed. And I'll just put the final word on that. I think economic independence gives you one very other important thing. A sense of self-worth. Thanks very much for being with us through this discussion, and thank you to all of you.
Thank you.